When a Presbyterian minister is called to serve as the pastor to a particular congregation, there's a process that must be followed, various steps that must be taken. And one of those steps involves the job applicant preaching at what is called a neutral pulpit. It's preaching in a congregation that is unrelated either to the calling church or to the person looking for a new job. And so it was that as a young seminarian, I found myself in Monterey County applying for a job in the town of Gonzales, but preaching at a church in Salinas on the Sunday after Easter in 1993. And I hardly remember that sermon. It was something about doubting Thomas, no doubt, because it was the first Sunday after Easter. But what I do remember is that after worship, an elderly gentleman in the congregation of Northminster Presbyterian Church in Salinas came up to me and he said, "Thank you for not using a sports metaphor in your sermon. Most young men," he told me, "use sports metaphors all the time because they assume that every man and most women like sports, but it's not true. I'm a man and I hate sports." That had a profound impact on me. Before that congregation, I hadn't thought one way or another about using sports metaphors, and my decision not to use a sports metaphor in the sermon that Sunday morning wasn't something I planned on at all. But for better or for worse, after that conversation, I pledged to myself that unless I was preaching on one of the two or three places in the New Testament where Paul or the author of Hebrews actually uses a sports metaphor, I myself would never again preach a sermon with a sports metaphor. And you know what? Despite the fact that I'm a sports fan and I have played organized sports from time to time at various points in my life, still, it's been pretty easy to keep my promise not to preach with sports metaphors. But today I'm finding it difficult. It's hard because the core message of this morning's lesson from Matthew is one that's easy for us. I mean, this morning's lesson is at its core a social justice message. We are to feed, clothe, welcome, and visit the least of these, the poor, the outcast, the bullied, the immigrant, the stranger, those who are different from the societal norm in one way or another. That's an important message, but it's not hard or challenging for the people of Montclair Presbyterian Church. It's one thing that might be hard in this message for you is that Jesus talks about hell, but it's interesting to note that Jesus' words, this is one of two times Jesus talks about hell in the New Testament, right? And both times, Jesus isn't talking about believing the wrong things. He's not talking about having the wrong kind of human intimacy. He's not even talking about chewing tobacco. When Jesus sends people to hell, it's always because they have ignored the needs of the poor, the less fortunate. That's Jesus' message. And that's not really challenging for Montclair Presbyterian Church. Montclair Presbyterian Church has been practicing the core message of the parable of the sheep and the goats, at least since the 1960s, when the congregation took a stand against so-called redlining, which is the practice of making some neighborhoods off limits to home buyers who are not white. Now, you lost a lot of members over that one, and your pastor was more or less run out of town, but it paved the way for the long pastoral leadership of Duke Robinson, under which this congregation became a giant in the world of social justice ministry. You welcomed the immigrant, you opened yourself to being transformed by the presence of folks who self-identify as lesbian or gay, you recognized the face of Christ in children around the world, and then Karen Stokes came to be your pastor, and with her, you developed a strong sense of what it means to practice radical hospitality. In a wonderful closing of a circle, Karen is the stepdaughter of the pastor who was run out of town for opposing redlining. You guys got it. This passage is easy for you. What's not easy is thinking of a non-sports metaphor for talking about how easy it is for you. I'd like to say that for you, this passage is like the U.S. women's national team playing some recreational league soccer team. Or I'd like to say that you hit this one out of the park like Barry Bonds at batting practice. Or I'd like to say that you own this passage like Tiger Woods playing putt-putt golf. But I can't say those things because that would be a sports metaphor, right? So maybe I have to say that for you, this passage is like Glenn Gould playing chopsticks or Rich Larson running through some Suzuki exercises on his violin. I don't know. but I do know that you get this passage. Now, I wrote about this in my contact piece this week, but after celebration last Sunday, I left directly from the sanctuary to an event in Marin County. It was a symposium on the relationship between Jews and Muslims. I went to represent our congregation's faith trio, our relationship with Gehillah Synagogue and the Islamic Cultural Center, and there were a lot of people at that event, maybe 150 folks, and yet as far as I know, I was the only Christian at the event. And it was at this event, the symposium, that I found out about the mass murder in Texas, in which a gunman killed 26 people at a small town Baptist church in Texas. After the tragedy was announced, the assembled folks stood together in silence, and we prayed together for the victims and the survivors and for our nation. It was me and a room full of Muslims and Jews together praying for Christians who had been attacked and murdered at church. It was easy to experience Christ in the presence of Muslims and Jews praying for Baptists in Texas. And I think you get that. It's much harder to meet and to experience Christ among those who think we shouldn't talk about gun control in the aftermath of gun violence, which, by the way, is a very convenient thing to believe if you never, ever want to talk about gun control at all, because tragically, in America, there is no day that isn't the day after an act of gun violence. So we never have to talk about it, right? It is hard to see the face of Christ in the face of those who would run out and buy guns after a mass shooting, thereby causing the gun manufacturer's profits to soar in the aftermath of bloodshed. It's hard to see Jesus in those who get rich off of tragedy, but we know we're supposed to. We know we're supposed to see God in the face of everyone, just as we're supposed to drive through Oakland and see the proliferation of homeless encampments, and we're supposed to see Jesus there, living in a tent under the overpass. And we're supposed to see Jesus and the politicians from the wealthier regions of the Bay Area who push their homeless populations to Oakland and to San Jose. It's not easy to see past our comfort and to recognize Christ among the homeless. And it's not easy to see past our progressive values to see Christ in the privileged white politicians who funnel homeless populations to places like San Jose and Oakland. But we know we're supposed to. Even if it doesn't come naturally to us, you know that, you get that. It's easy for you at least to believe it. So because the social justice implications of this passage probably are easy for you to embrace, even if they're hard to apply, let me invite you to consider this passage from a spiritual point of view, not so much as a story with ethical implications, but as a parable with a spiritual invitation. Because spiritually, this story has a powerful message. The message is this: if you want to know God, if you want to experience the presence of Christ, one way to do that is to look at all the people who are all around you. I won't say that this is the only way to God that is presented in Scripture. Certainly, the Bible invites us to see the divine in creation and in the spiritual and ethical precepts handed down in Holy Writ. Personally, my favorite way to encounter God is by making pilgrimages. I also like to eat great food. There are thousands of known ways to find God, and there are an infinite number of unknown ways to find God. And I do not want to denigrate or to speak ill of any spiritual path that anyone has taken. But the problem with many spiritual paths is that they call us to go out of our way to find God. We have to make time to get out into nature, or we have to set down our cell phones and pick up the Bible or some other book. We have to find our old CDs with Bach cantatas, or we have to travel, or we have to cook. Most paths to God call us to go out of our way, which can be wonderful, but it also is without question an inconvenience. Meanwhile, all this morning's lesson asks us to do is it asks us to be open to the presence of Christ in all of the people we meet. You don't have to go to Yosemite. You don't have to read the Bible or meditate or do anything else you would not ordinarily be doing. I mean, I hope you will go out of your way to find God from time to time, but practically, we cannot spend our lives outside of our lives. What we can do is we can find Christ in the people we meet. Because unless we are finding God by living as hermits, pretty much all of us will have some kind of human interaction. And when we do, we can choose to recognize Christ in the people that we meet. Now, this is not to say the people we meet are actually Jesus. Rather, this passage invites us to remember that God has made each person in her image. And each person is beloved of God, and Christ is present wherever God's love abides. Now, I'm enough of a Calvinist to understand that the spiritual invitation of this morning's lesson from Matthew is not always easy. After all, some people are jerks, and some people are straight up evil. And finding the face of Jesus in such people isn't easy at all, and you don't have to pretend it is. In fact, I hope you will just go ahead and avoid awful people whenever possible. Any religion that encourages unnecessary interaction with mean people is bad religion. Don't forget that. Mother Teresa famously was able to see Christ in the faces of dictators and other awful people. But you don't have to be Mother Teresa. And the good news is that you don't really need to be Mother Teresa to find Christ in humanity. You know, most people are actually pretty wonderful. Sure, we all have our failings, and we all have bad days, but usually people live lives in which the divine spark is at least somewhat recognizable. In fact, I would say that God can be found in most people we meet, not just because those people are basically good people, but God can be found in the people we meet because God looks for us. God reaches out to us and calls for us to recognize God in the people we meet. When we meet people, we find a God who is looking for us. Because God lives in the people around us, and God forever pursues us. So dearly beloved, I hope you will continue your strong tradition of social justice here at Montclair Presbyterian Church. I hope you will continue to see Christ alive in the poor and the oppressed and the marginalized and the sore beset. I hope that recognition of divinity will keep you active in your work of building the kingdom of God. But at the same time, do not forget the spiritual invitation of this parable. Don't just look for more work to do. Don't just look for more social justice action to be part of. Rather, look for Christ. Find God in the faces of the people you meet, regardless of their social status. And let that recognition of Christ deepen your spiritual connection. Try to see the image of God in each person you meet, no matter what they or what you are doing. Try to sense God's love hovering in and around every child of God. It isn't the only way to find God, but in the busyness of life, it is a good way to find the God who is searching for us.